Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
Hello, American government and civics. Welcome to what for some of you will be the last podcast of mine that you listen to. So this is for our last unit test, which covers the civil liberties and civil rights unit. I'm also going to talk about your performance final slash written final at the end of this podcast. So the review is on E-Class. I've also at this point sent a parent square with it linked. So hopefully you can find it so you can prepare for this test, which will happen on Thursday, May 2nd, in class during the block schedule. We have seventh period on that day from 12:45 to 2:10. So you should have plenty of time to do both, as it is a shorter test, and then the written final as well. If not, we'll figure something out and make an adjustment, because we still have the following week to get stuff done. All right, let's jump into the review. So first off, the amendments, you got to memorize them, okay? There's going to be some questions on the test that will say, hey, this happens. So let's say you get a fair trial, right to jury, all that kind of stuff, and you got to say, okay, that's the Sixth Amendment. Or it might say, which the First Amendment does this, and you got to pick out which freedom you get there. So I'm going to run through them, but be sure you're memorizing them. And then there's a couple of extra amendments as well that you have to know. So the First Amendment is your big one, in that it has five freedoms in there. It's got the freedom of speech, which allows you to criticize the government as you see fit, both verbally and symbolically. You've got your freedom of religion, which allows you to worship how you want to. You've got the freedom of press, which doesn't apply to too many of us, but the press, the media can write and say what they want to about the government for the most part. You have the right to assemble, and you have the right to petition. All those things are included in that First Amendment. The Second Amendment is your right to bear arms. The Third Amendment is the no quartering of troops. That will not be on the test. The Fourth Amendment is no unlawful search and seizure, so the government cannot search you, and they cannot use illegally obtained evidence against you. I jumped ahead of myself there. They can't search you without three things. They can search you with a warrant, they can search you if they have probable cause, and they can search you if they have your permission. But that's it. Those are the only three ways they can really legally search you. The Fifth Amendment protects you from self-incrimination, so you cannot be forced to talk to the police, and you cannot be forced to testify against yourself at your trial. Okay. There's also a few other things in there. There's double jeopardy, meaning you can't be tried for the same crime twice. And there is something called eminent domain, where the police are allowed, not the police, the government can, I'm going to say, take your property. However, they have to give you a fair offer. They have to pay you and compensate you for that. They can't just come take it. The Sixth Amendment is your right to a fair and speedy trial, and all the things that go with that. So the right to jury, the right to counsel, the right to know who's witnessing against you, things like that. The Seventh Amendment provides you for a jury with a civil trial. So if you get sued for over $20, you're guaranteed of getting a jury. The Eighth Amendment protects you from cruel and unusual punishment. The Ninth Amendment gives us as citizens rights that aren't listed in the Constitution, and the Tenth Amendment does the same thing for states. All righty. The 14th Amendment is what defines a citizen. So it gives basically outlines this is what a citizen is, and it has two important clauses to remember: the Equal Protection Clause, which just says, hey, as a citizen, all laws are going to be equally applied to everybody, or at least they should. There's still a lot of questions there, even today, about laws being equally applied. And then due process, which is your rights, the due process clause, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, but that's your rights as an accused person. Okay. The 19th Amendment, I jumped ahead.
The 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote. The 24th Amendment is going to outlaw poll taxes. So that's a barrier that they get rid of with that amendment. And then the 26th Amendment gives you, as an 18-year-old, the right to vote. Alrighty. The purpose of the Bill of Rights. So twofold. First off, we got to kind of jump back to a unit from back in like January or February. But the first thing is that this is what got the Constitution signed. Remember, the Anti-Federalists were against the new government because they were fearful that it was going to become too powerful. And one of the things was, hey, there's no listing of citizens' rights in that document. And the Anti-Federalists were very, very much so hung up on that. And this is something I'm glad they did because I'm not a big conspiracy person, but I am glad that the government doesn't just have all this power to do whatever they want to. And there are some limitations placed on them by the Bill of Rights. Okay. The second thing is that limitation. It does place limitations on the government. So going back to the limited government idea, these are things the government can't do to us. They can't take away from us. They are limitations. They are protections from the government. That is our civil liberties. That is the definition of civil liberties. It is things the government can't do to you, can't take away from you. They are freedoms that you have. All right. The Establishment Clause. So this is a part of the First Amendment, freedom of religion. The Establishment Clause says that the government will not create a religion. So there's not going to be a state-sponsored religion that we have to go to, that we're forced to go to. All right. That's the Establishment Clause. And this pops up in a court case, Engle versus Vitale, where students were forced to pray. That's not happening in a public school. There will not be a time where you are made to pray. Of course, y'all are about to get out of here, so it's not really a concern of yours, but you can't be made to. Now, does that mean you can't pray? Can you pray before this test on Thursday, May 2nd? Sure. Say your prayer. Am I going to hold your hand and pray with you? No, I'm not. Okay, that's the Establishment Clause. The Free Exercise Clause, this is what lets us worship how we want to. So you can do, one of the mainstream religions. You can do one of the kind of off the beaten path religions. You can worship as you see fit. You just can't do illegal things. But that comes from the Free Exercise Clause. The Exclusionary Clause, this is part of the Fourth Amendment. And this is what is going to get illegally obtained evidence kicked out against you. So there's a court case. It's a little bit later on down the road, Matt versus Ohio. So I'll talk about it now. In this case, the police showed up to Dolores Mapp's house. They wanted to look for a escaped convict. She said no. They left. They come back with a piece of paper. And they're like, hey, let us in. We have a warrant to search your house. Now, they never show her the warrant. The warrant never surfaces again, because it was probably a fake warrant. But anyways, while they're looking for this person, they find some drug stuff and they arrest her for that. She's charged and convicted. She appeals saying, hey, they should have never been in my house. And the Supreme Court is going to agree. And so that kind of creates the exclusionary rule where if the evidence is illegally obtained, meaning they didn't have a valid search warrant, they didn't have probable cause to search you, they didn't have your permission, and they find something, then they can't use that against you. Okay. And that, just remember, it's the exclusionary rule, exclusionary clause. The Due Process Clause, this is part of that 14th Amendment that I mentioned earlier. This is all your rights as an accused person. Okay. And they're the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 8th Amendment. So one of the big things in this country is our natural rights. And if the government is going to try and take away your natural rights through, trying you and sending you to prison, they have to treat you fairly throughout the process. That is the due process. That's what due process is you being treated fairly throughout the time from the time you're a suspect. And with the Fourth Amendment, they want to search you. They have to get a warrant, to probable cause, all those things. Okay. Through your questioning, the police can't force you to talk. You have the right to remain silent. Through your trial, you have the right to remain silent. You don't have to talk there. Your Sixth Amendment rights to a fair and speedy trial and all those things. Your Eighth Amendment, even when you're charged and convicted and you're in prison, they have to treat you fairly. You cannot be subjected to cruel and unusual punishment, even while you're in prison. Your Eighth Amendment protects you. So that's the Due Process Clause. And, that's what we're getting at when we talk about that. All right, the events of the civil rights. So I'm going to be honest with you. On the test, you got to put these in order. They're in order here. So just memorize this order. Abolishing slavery. Now, we can
you can make an argument that civil rights kicked off well before this. You can argue how you want to. For the test purposes, we're going to kick off slavery, ending as the kickoff of the civil rights. Okay. Next up is the women's suffrage. That goes back to that 19th Amendment. Prohibition ends, and then 18-year-olds get the right to vote. This is very broad strokes, meaning, we're not talking about anything within there. You don't have to know the 19th Amendment for this question, the women's suffrage. You don't have to know that, 21st Amendment for the prohibition ends. You just got to be able to put those four things in order. Let's take a break and be right back.
Hola.
Hello. This call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow. Ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow. Now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
All right, welcome back. Picking up with Brown versus Board of Education. So this is a very important case for the civil rights era. Now, this is something y'all have probably gotten throughout your school career. So I'll spend a little bit of time on it, but not a super great deal. All right, so this we know, hopefully, is the case that overturned Plessy versus Ferguson, which had created the whole concept of separate but equal. Sorry, I couldn't spit it out there. And that was born, Plessy versus Ferguson was in the 1890s, and Homer Plessy was a black guy. He was on a trolley train thing. I don't know what it was in New Orleans, something like that. And he refused to give up his seat in the front, which was in the white section. And he was arrested, charged, convicted, all that kind of stuff. He appeals, saying, hey, this isn't fair, this isn't equal protection. But the court says, well, it's okay to have these separate facilities, these separate seating sections, if they're equal. And so that is the policy of the country for 60 years, and that applies to the schools. And so y'all have probably seen pictures from your U.S. history days of the differences between the facilities, between the black and white sections and all that kind of stuff. All right. So fast forward to the 1950s, the NAACP has had a lot of success with this concept of separate but equal, because they can take pictures of these places. They can go to the schools and they can take a picture of the white school and they can take a picture of the black school. And it's pretty obvious that they are definitely separate, but they are very rarely ever equal. All right. And you can see in the pictures. And so they go to court with these pictures as evidence, and it's pretty cut and dry. All right. So they have a huge success rate. It was like 29 out of 33 cases that they fought, that they won and showed, hey, this isn't equal. Okay. The big one is Brown versus Board. In this, now, the NAACP had several cases to pick from. They had cases in South Carolina. They had cases in New York, out west. They chose Topeka, Kansas, though, because Kansas is the center of the country. It's not like the epicenter of all action, but it's just the center of the country. And they wanted this one because this is going to demonstrate, hey, this isn't just a Southern thing. Had they chosen South Carolina and they had won, people would have said, well, that's just a Southern problem. Had they chosen the New York one, there was a case of it in Syracuse, New York. People would have said, well, that's just a Syracuse problem, out west, so on and so forth. So if they'd chosen these regional spots, the country could have kind of written off a Supreme Court decision here. However, in the middle, in Topeka, Kansas, the center of the country, they can point and say, look, this isn't just a Southern thing. It's not just a northern thing. This has happened in the middle of the country. This happened everywhere. So this is why this is so important. And the Supreme Court gets it. The argument is that separate facilities is violating the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. All righty. And the Supreme Court gets it. They take a look at it. And, they eventually rule in favor of the NAACP. They rule in favor of the Brown family. And say, yeah, this is definitely a violation of equal protection. And this is what is going to integrate the schools. Now, you probably remember from your U.S. history days that it took a while for the South to integrate. That court case was in 54. It took until like 66, 67 for the South to fully integrate. All right, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, this is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation of the Civil Rights movement. This is the one that's supposed to end discrimination based on race, sex, religion.
and whatever other thing you can think of. All righty. And it did a pretty good job of attempting it. And now, this piece of legislation did not end prejudice. Okay, so don't think that's what I'm saying when I say it did a pretty good job. What I mean, though, is it gave the federal government and governments in general the power and the ability to try and stop people that were being discriminatory, that were being prejudiced in their hiring practices, in their application process, whatever the process might be. It gave the government the opportunity to come in and start forcing some of those places to try and to make them to act right, basically, is what I'm trying to say here. And so the Civil Rights Act is a huge piece of legislation. It's still something that's that can be referenced today in court cases if there's discrimination. All righty. Now, the one thing it didn't do too good a job of is voting. So voting was still an issue. Registration to vote, voting safely for minorities and things like that. So the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965. So a year later, the Voting Rights Act is passed. And the Voting Rights Act is going to be a super important piece of legislation, especially for African Americans in the South, because it makes it safer to register to vote. It makes it easier. There's less red tape to get through, because that was one of the things counties in the South would do, was try and make it as difficult a process as possible. So basically, it's making it safer and fairer and less discriminatory for African Americans to go register to vote. And you see, if you look at some charts and tables, which we're not doing in this class because we're not going that in depth, but if you ever do have a chance to look at some of the numbers, you'll see that there's a huge uptick in African Americans running for seats. So mayors, state legislatures, national, things like that. And you start seeing them get some seats because now it's a little bit fairer as far as the voting practices go. Excuse me. All right, the Americans with Disabilities Act. This was fairly recent. I say recent now. It's 1990. But this was to end discrimination against Americans with disabilities. So you could not be discriminated against just because you had some kind of handicap or disability. As long as you could do the job, okay? So if you can do the job, you should have a fair shake at getting hired and keeping your job and things like that. It also forced states to retrofit their buildings and had to have handicap access and things like that. Poll taxes. This was a discriminatory practice, a voting barrier. People had to pay to go vote, and it was designed to keep African Americans from voting, in the 1800s and even into the 1900s. The problem they ran into was that poor whites couldn't afford to vote either. So this is where the grandfather clause comes from, if you remember that. And that's where if your grandfather was eligible to vote in 1860, then you were automatically eligible to vote and you had the fees waived. Well, the problem for African Americans was they didn't have a grandfather that was eligible to vote in 1860 because slavery was still happening at that time. So that was their kind of way of getting around the poll tax. Suffrage, this is just the right to vote. So if you see that term, that's all that is. All right, the court cases, Gideon versus Wainwright. First off, no, this is the Sixth Amendment, okay? And in this case, Gideon was accused of breaking into a bar of some sort. He was charged. He asked for a lawyer, but at the time it was a misdemeanor, and at the time they did not give lawyers to misdemeanors, okay? So if you're charged with a felony, you could get a lawyer no matter what. Misdemeanors, not the case. And so he asked for a lawyer. They did not give him one. At his trial, he was convicted. I don't know that a lawyer would have necessarily guaranteed that he was found innocent, but he would have had a better chance because like their star witness, and I might embellish this a little bit, but she was old and practically blind. And she said, yeah, I saw Gideon leaving the bar or whatever it was. A good lawyer probably could have called into question some of the things that she said. But anyways, he's charged, he's convicted, he goes to jail. He appeals based on the Sixth Amendment and the right to counsel. And so that's what Gideon versus Wainwright is about. So remember right to lawyer and remember the Sixth Amendment. I already did Matt versus Ohio, just to recall, that is a Fourth Amendment case and it deals with the exclusionary rule. So you can't have illegally obtained evidence used against you. Now I do wanna say this, hopefully no one ever has this happen to them, but it's not up to the prosecution to decide, hey, that evidence is illegally used or illegally obtained.
it's not up to the judge to pick out evidence that was illegally obtained. They will make a ruling on it, but it's up to your lawyer to say, hey, this was obtained without a warrant. Hey, this was obtained without probable cause, so on and so forth. So it's up to your lawyer to get that stuff done. Engle versus Vitale mentioned this earlier. This deals with the Establishment Clause and the separation of church and state. There is no school prayer, okay? Well, no teacher-led school prayer. So you're not going to be made to preach, not to preach, but to pray. You can pray on your own, but once again, school employees are probably not going to pray with you. There's a case from South Georgia. It's pretty old at this point, but a football coach was actually baptizing football players, like after practice, dunking them in the ice bath, thing like that. I think he got fired eventually. All right, Oregon versus Smith. This is a free exercise case. And in this one, two Native Americans, they showed up to work high from a substance they had done during one of their religious ceremonies. They had done peyote. I'm not sure how you do that, but anyways, they came to work high and they got fired. Now, it didn't help that they worked at a drug rehab center. Okay, so mental note, don't do that. Alrighty, but anyways, they got fired and they wanted to collect unemployment. And if you don't know this, your employer can fight your unemployment claims. And so the rehab center was fighting their unemployment claims. So that's what they are arguing, is not necessarily that they got fired, but that they want to be able to collect unemployment, and that they were just practicing their religion. And so that's the argument. And the court is going to rule against them, and they're not going to honor the free exercise clause, because you can't do illegal things and claim free exercise. Near versus Minnesota. This is a court case that deals with freedom of press. Basically, a city government in Minnesota was trying to stop the press from running a story about the city government being corrupt. The government was trying to stop them. It's called prior restraint. And the court says, no, you can't stop them. The only time really the government can kind of put a stop to a story is if it deals with national security. Alrighty. California versus Escovedo. And I'll probably say that very wrong. There's really two cases in California. There's California versus Escovedo and California versus, I want to say Green. But in this case, it deals with illegal search and seizures. Okay. So there is a house. The cops know that the house is kind of a drug house where drugs are sold and bought and all that kind of stuff. They're sitting on the house. They don't see anything. They can't prove anything. However, they one day see a guy show up to the house, goes in empty-handed. He comes out with all these containers. They follow him. He runs a stop sign or some silly little traffic thing, and he gets stopped. The police search him. They search his car. In their search of the car, they come across the containers. They open up the containers, and they find the drugs. So the question was, can the cops, in the search of your car, can they open up things that are sealed and contained, like that container? And the court rules in their favor. So they can search through things that they find in your car. The other one dealt with trash, kind of the same deal. They could not prove anything. They were sitting on a drug house, and eventually trash was brought out, and they searched the trash, and they found some drug paraphernalia and were able to arrest them for that. Okay. Greg versus Georgia, this deals with the Eighth Amendment. So just remember that is the Eighth Amendment, and it was a death penalty case here in Georgia. Greg broke into a home, killed somebody, and got the death penalty. And the Supreme Court said that the death penalty was not a violation of the Eighth Amendment and cruel and unusual punishment, and so it's okay. And then finally, in New Jersey versus TLO, TLO is a student, 13 years old. She's caught smoking in the 80s in the bathroom or somewhere like that, and is taken to the principal's office. In the principal's office, they search her bag. They find some drugs, so she is arrested. She is going to claim, hey, this violates my Fourth Amendment right to no unlawful search and seizure, because you didn't really have a reason to go through my bag. And it goes to the court, and the Supreme Court says, well, you know what? No. The schools have a little more leeway, and the schools can search your bag, and they were perfectly within reason. And so the Fourth Amendment, it's – You still have it here at school, but not as much as you have it outside of school, is what I would say. But anyways, that deals with the Fourth Amendment. All right, take one last break and come back and talk about the performance final.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back. So your performance final slash written final, first off, everybody has to write it, regardless of your exemption status, okay? You're going to have three prompts that you're going to pick from. You will pick one. So I'm going to go over the topics in those three so you can kind of make a decision, hey, coming into it, I know I want to write about this, okay? Your first topic to pick from is the foundations of government. So going back to late January and early February. So you'll have to be able to talk about like the different types of government, democracy versus maybe like an autocracy, authoritarian governments versus democracy, so citizen freedom, things like that. Some of the principles of the Constitution, so think of limited government, the rule of law, those things we did way back in unit, I think it was two. Okay. The second topic is the branches of government. You would pick one of the branch of government with this question. So if you choose the second topic, you will pick either the executive, the legislative, or the judicial branch. Okay. And then you would write about it, and you're going to tell me about its functions, its power, how it is outlined in the U.S. Constitution. You're going to explain its structure. You're going to talk about who holds power in the branch. Give me some checks and balances that are amongst the branches, powers that the Constitution gives this branch, and you're going to provide some examples. Alrighty. The third one and the final choice is from the most recent unit and the stuff we just talked about, which are the five basic rights of the First Amendment. And remember, we said that's press, speech, religion, assembly, and petition. And you would just explain, hey, free speech. You get to kind of say what you want to, either say or symbolic, and the government can't stop you. Alrighty. You would talk about some challenges to these things. So if you need to cite court cases here, you could cite court cases. You would talk about the role the government plays in protecting. So what is the government doing to protect your right to religion, your right to speech, things like that. And yeah, that is the performance slash written final. Once again, you have three choices. You pick one of the three. If you choose the branches, you only have to write about one of the branches. All right. If you have questions, if you have concerns about the written final, if you have questions or concerns about this test, please just shoot me an email. Wednesday, the 1st, is a regular day, so we're kind of on a normal schedule. So if you need to see me about anything on that day, you can come in and see me during that time. If you need to come in on Thursday, the 2nd, during Eagle Time, we're in Eagle Time for 90 minutes to start the day. So you can come in then if you need to review or ask questions or anything like that. Just let me know and I'll send you or send a digital pass for you. And after this, after I get these grades in, hopefully on that Friday, on that Monday, we can talk about your possibly potentially exempting the final exam. But anyways, that's for a little bit later. Guys, I hope you have a great day and let me know if I can help you. All right, take care. Bye-bye.